stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with Kate Siebert, who is the maid in the farce Perfect Wedding, which is currently playing at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. I'm also playing a review of that play so that you can all decide that you want to go down and see it. Hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down. Finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
The Lynn Show is about self-discovery. It is about finding the person that you really are. That is, for many of us, a different someone than the person we have been pretending to be, the person we were told we needed to be, the person we think we ought to be. I'm a psychotherapist, and I don't know how often in my practice people have said to me, after describing something that they do or think or can't do, "Is this normal?" And I have to tell them over and over again that anything that they can do or can't do, anything that they think or feel, any behavior or activity that is theirs, is just human. All the rest of us have it too. So you can't do anything or be anything or have anything that's not normal. Yes, sometimes we have too much of a thing or too little of a thing, but the thing in and of itself, everybody has it. So the question, is this normal? That always comes out of the belief that there's a right way to be and a wrong way to be, and maybe somehow I am not the right way. So this show is about making the point that much more valuable than looking for what is normal or right or correct or healthy, that's the other watchword. It's not healthy to be what I am, to do what I do. So rather than looking for the healthy thing, the good thing, the right thing, the normal thing, the what everybody else thinks is the good thing, it's really much better, in my personal point of view, to look for what is. It's not rocket science that when you are trying to be something that you are not, that takes a tremendous amount of energy and never really feels good, even when you manage to pull it off. So, in the name of comfort, in the name of ease, in the name of serenity, in the name of I'm okay, I am hoping that you are, and maybe this show is helping a little, looking for who you really are, what you really want, what really feels good to you, shifting your attention from the idea of whether what you are is good enough, right enough, healthy enough. Will this, if you find it, the who you really are, always go down well with everyone else? Maybe not. And that, of course, is one of the reasons that people are so reluctant to find who they really are. Because instinctively we know there may very well be people, and sometimes very important people to us, who are not going to want us to be that. Who are going to want to change us. Who are going to want to tell us that this way of being, this thing that we are doing, this activity or thought process is not good. Of course, that only means it's not good for them, right? So, it is my hope that the Lynn Show encourages you to consider the possibility that there are aspects of you that are not the real you, and that the real you exists and is findable. So, if you want to learn more about this whole question of finding yourself, self-discovery, I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can find it on my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. You can also find my email. You want to talk to me about it, you can click on my email address and send me a question and I will answer you. The other thing I do in this show in order to make this point, the point about what therapists call congruence, that is that what you see is what there is I play interviews with people who have made their living or their life with an art, because in order to do that in this culture, it has to be who you really are. We make it so hard for artists in this culture. And today's interview is with Kate Siepert, who is exactly what I am trying to present. This is a woman who knew by the time she was 8 who she was and what she wanted to do, and she has pursued it continually with a little side trip to another kind of activity which strengthened for her certainty that what she is and what she wants to do is be an actor. And that is what she is. And so when you listen to people like Kate, you can hear that through line, the powerful sense, I've always known, I still know, right or wrong, difficult or easy, I am who I am. And, so I'm not going to say anything more. You can hear this from Kate, and here she is. Oh, and she's appearing in Perfect Wedding at the Gompertz Theater in Sarasota, Florida. And after Kate's interview, I'm going to play a review of the play. It is my hope that after you've heard the review and also Kate, that you will want to go down and see it. It's delightful. So here, Kate Siepert. All right. I am here with Kate Siepert in the ladies' dressing room at FST. And Kate is here in the ensemble production of A Perfect Wedding at the brand new Gompertz Theater. Kate's been prepped, so she may actually know what I wind up telling everybody, which is that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I think it's fairly clear that the art to which you are dedicating chunks of your life is theater.
Yes.
Yes, okay, good. So I only ask one question, and that is, how did it get started? When was the very first moment in your life when you thought, oh, people are watching me, that's nice, or performing, or singing, or dancing, or talking, or...
Yeah. Actually, it started when I was probably about 8 years old. And I was always very outgoing as a child and always, I guess, performing just naturally, but... I was in, are you from 4-H?
Yes.
Okay, so I grew up in a small farming community, so I was part of 4-H, pretty much born and raised in the club I was in, And so every year they did a skit called Share the Fun, and we performed that year at the State Fair. This was the first year I was officially able to be part of the 4-H Club.
Because you were not old enough before?
Well, I was not old enough, even though I'd been going to meetings because my mom had been the 4-H leader.
So you'd been sitting in.
So I'd been sitting in.
Oh, whatever, that's what you meant. You were born and raised.
Born and raised into it, yes.
Right. So you also got to see the earlier shows, is that?
Yeah, I mean, and it was always, it looked like a lot of fun. And so this one year we went to the State Fair and did our thing. It was, the whole evening was called Share the Fun, and there was always a theme that people had to do. And our, like, skit, I guess you could say, was a spoof on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but getting her to the State Fair, the 4-H State Fair. And I played the queen when she turned into the witch. So there was a moment where, as I'm leaving the stage after, you know, I've given her a, rather than an apple, I poisoned four-leaf clover, cookie to eat, and I left the stage, and I made some sort of, like, face, like, aha, or something, and it was, and the audience just laughed, and it was this, it sounds so cheesy, but it's almost cinematic, where it felt like, here I am in this big spotlight, you can't really see anybody, and I felt like that moment just suspended in time, where it was like, hey, I'm funny, I could do this.
So I love this, the moment is suspended.
So that moment was just suspended in time, and it was, that's when I knew that, hey, I actually am funny. So I was always, like, the clowny kid that was always trying to make people laugh, I guess. And then from...
Well, wait. So what I hear you saying is people had laughed at me before. Maybe my family, maybe my friends. You know, I said things and they had smiled or giggled,
right,
or laughed.
But this was an audience, a big audience.
But, right, of strangers.
Of strangers, I was like, whoa, exciting. And so then...
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how to beat this, but...
Yeah, no.
You remember the feeling?
Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know, it was just a magical moment.
Right,
of
right.
Being like,
and you still remember.
This is, yeah.
Right?
This is what I want to do.
Yeah. I love this. They love it. And this is what I want to do. Very nice. Okay.
And, you know, and I wasn't scared to be up on stage. And I was like, this is great. This is a great place to be.
So did you know that that was a job or a career, or you just thought, oh, good, more of this?
I thought of it as that. I mean, I convinced, not convinced, but I, I tried to audition for Annie when I was 9, but I auditioned for the role of Miss Hannigan because I thought that that was, of course, the 9-year-old would be cast as Miss Hannigan.
Where did you audition for?
This was Peoria, the Peoria Players Children's Theater.
So it was Children's Theater, so it wasn't such a stretch.
It wasn't such a stretch, but, I mean, they had...
Older kids.
Older, well, they were young adults that were playing the older roles, which, in hindsight, was appropriate, but... when people would always, growing up in the community I did, which was a smaller farming community outside of Peoria, Illinois, but they, you know, most people would never dream of actually being an actor or doing that as a profession, because certainly there was theater and I like school plays and stuff like that, but I was always just determined, no matter when people were like, well, that's, there's no money in that, or it's a really hard career to...
Okay, so did you start saying this at 9?
Yeah, I mean, that is what I wanted to do since I was little kid.
Since that moment in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And you said right away, this is what I want to do, and people started telling you right away.
Well, it's really hard, and really hard to get into, and I think somebody had actually bought me a book about, like, kids and show business or whatever. But, you know, there wasn't also a lot accessible to me to be able to do.
Right.
Really until...
One more question.
Yeah, no.
That your family, they are part of the chorus that said, don't do that, dear?
No, not... I mean, it was more of... Initially, it was... When I was a little kid, it was kind of like, well, it's a really hard, you know...
Yeah, they weren't really taking you that seriously.
Seriously. And then it was probably by the time I was in high school, I think they pretty much new, but they were very supportive. My mom, because my parents divorced when I was about 3 years old, so I was lived mostly with my mom, but she, like, I was involved in pretty much every fine arts activity that the school offered. So she was always like, you know, go, this is what, you know, you obviously have a gift for it, and you're, it's what you love. And there was never, by that point, there was never any question of
so other fine arts
for it and
other fine arts things that you participated in.
I started the French horn when I was in sixth grade. So
what made you choose the French horn?
It was actually because my mother wanted me to play the flute because she had a flute, and I pretty much chose the exact opposite thing to play. But I had to give it up when I went to college because the music school and the theater school kind of ran themselves as conservatories, and so timing-wise, I couldn't do both.
Well, all right. So by high school and the fact that you are clearly in everything that has anything to do with performing,
mm-hmm.
It's clear, I think you said before, that you're going to go on to school and study this. And
mm-hmm.
So what did you do?
I didn't want to go to a school that had a grad school program because in theater, it's rare that you'll get on stage with a graduate program. So I'd rather have been a big fish in a small pond. I ended up going to Illinois Wesleyan University, and it just so happened that Illinois Wesleyan was only 45 minutes from home, which was nice because my mom then came to see a reproduction. And it really...
And you majored in theater?
In theater. I have a BFA. It was a terrific experience. We, your first year there, your freshman year, you're doing all your basic fundamental acting classes, but then you don't actually get to perform on stage until your sophomore year. So your freshman year, you're learning, you have to do all the crews for the shows and stuff, which I think, for me as an actor, it's one of the things I've appreciated most, because it made me appreciate what all the other people are doing to make me look good on stage. Because there are a lot of people, I think, that aren't very nice to those people. So by the time your sophomores, we were just, you know, we were ready at that point to get on stage. And
had your technique down?
Had our technique down. We had been able to do some, the upperclassmen have, their directing classes that they take that we could be a part of or whatnot, but I think it also kind of gives you that confidence, like you're feeling good about where you are with your instrument, that by the time you're a sophomore, when you're able to get up on the boards, that it's not like a...
Well, you did scenes and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, we
right.
would do scenes and stuff like that for the classes and whatnot, but this was... It was an amazing time, and I feel like going to school, even though it wasn't really that far from where I grew up, it felt like this whole world opened up to me, where it was suddenly like, whoa, I can express things on stage, and, because most of the stuff in high school is like either a musical or like a really, really bad farcical type play for like a dinner theater type thing. So it was really great to actually kind of find the artistry of being an actor and putting that on stage and finding different mediums. Like, we had to take a lot of dance, and I ended up taking a lot of dance. I also did costume design when I wasn't on stage. It allowed me to stay involved with the productions. Like, if I wasn't cast in something, I could be a part of the costuming stuff, which I flourished in as well, which was pretty exciting.
So for you, it wasn't just about being on stage. It was about being a part of the production.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it kept me involved, and it didn't, it's always like you're in a show, and then when it's over, you're always like, what do I have next? But what was great is it kept me looking
involved.
Forward to something.
Right,
yeah.
It kept you involved. You didn't have to ask yourself what is next, because you could be in what is next.
Right.
So this is what happens all through school. You manage to stay connected. Involved. This is what you did in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were in everything, right? Okay, so you audition when you're a sophomore for
roles? You had to audition. for all of the, every production that they had. I mean, a lot of times they kind of had an idea of who they wanted to be in the roles, but a lot of times, you know, there was a surprise casting.
Mm-hmm.
And I, it was interesting, by the time we got to that time, some people decided they didn't want to be actors anymore and went on to the tech side. And there were some people that auditioned for things throughout their time there and really never got cast.
That was the question I had. Was it, wasn't, wow, that's really interesting. I made the assumption that they would make sure that everybody who was in the know.
No, there are some people that didn't get on stage until like the second semester of their senior year.
Wow, well, what does that mean? I mean, what does that do to somebody who's in?
I would imagine it would have been, I mean, like, certainly didn't happen to me. I think it would have been pretty difficult. I know that some of my friends that happened to, it made them pretty embittered.
I would bitter was the word, exactly. That was the word I was thinking of. I mean, I was thinking that, wow, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm on both sides of it. It seems to me these people are paying to go here, you know,
right.
And they're supposed to be learning to do this. And you would think, I would have thought, apparently erroneously, that the school would have felt obligated to give them the opportunity to be on stage and see what that's like, and that that would have been more important than casting the right people for the right roles.
Yeah, I don't know if there's like an obligation to...
Well, clearly there isn't if they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, there wasn't.
And nobody is talking to these people and saying...
They do. They have, at the end of your sophomore year, they have... You have to go have a meeting with all of the faculty, and they give you feedback. But it was never...
It was never, don't do this?
It was never, don't do this. There was one professor... He was a visiting professor from the UK who I became close friends with, and he would always say, like, I just don't understand why. Because, I mean, that's what happens in drama schools overseas, is that you are told. I mean, and there are people who start off wanting to be actors and go to school for that, and either they figure it out from themselves, it's not for them, or somebody just says, I'm not sure that this is the right path for you. And I think there are probably some people that they should have done that with. But then I have one friend... who didn't really get cast hardly at all, and she's one of the few people in her class. She was a class ahead of me. Now that she's in New York, and
she's actually working.
She's actually working,
right?
And we talk about that sometimes, mm-hmm. where we've, you know, she was like, "I'm not, you know, this is what I was meant to be doing."
And yeah, you know, the this always reminds me. Conversations like this always reminds me of the song "Nothing" from Chorus
mm-hmm.
Line.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
That acting classes and are not always where actors necessarily flourish. Right?
No, and in academia, too, I think is,
mm-hmm.
It does get a bit ivory tower. And, you know, I love my professors dearly. I still am in touch with a lot of them. But I think at the same time, you know, they've also been doing that for a long time and maybe don't have as much of a touchstone of what's.
Yeah. So, as you said, that didn't happen to you.
That did not happen to me.
Yes. So, do you remember the first show you got in?
Yeah. Because I was also the assistant costume designer. It was Into the Woods. It wasn't a big part. I went through all, and I was shocked that I did, because I was, even though at heart I would like to say I would love to be a musical theater performer, but I just don't necessarily have the chops for it. But I got cast in Into the Woods. I was the voice of the giant. So that was the first role, and then the first play of the second semester was kind of like my big break. I was given a role in an Edward Albee play, which was still, I feel like I understand it a little bit more, but at the time, I don't think I really could have truly understood exactly what the play was about. It was a two-hander about a husband and a wife, and it was pretty heady and meaty, and a lot of dialogue. And it was a pretty huge opportunity that I was given. So kind of after that, that kind of, I think, helped at least show that, hey, she could handle this. It's changed a lot now, but when I was there, there weren't a lot of upper-level acting classes for, like, junior, senior year. So I did a lot of independent studies. Create my own course, essentially. So usually what I would do would ask a professor to work with me, and we'd work on, like, doing monologues, either, like, auditioning techniques or working on different monologues for different voice, like, vocal ranges that I could do. But it pretty much ended up being stuff like that.
So you were working on your craft?
Yeah. I didn't know it at the time, but it was more of just being like, oh, this is so, I mean, it was frustrating not to have, like, an upper-level acting class, which is the whole point of why we're there. Here, this is what I should be doing. I'm taking all these amazing design classes. I should be taking upper-level acting classes, and if there's not, well, I'm going to create my own.
Of course you will.
So I did a lot of that. My junior year, this visiting professor from the UK came over and directed Merchant of Venice, which I got cast in. And that was probably one of my favorite things I did in undergrad. It was just a beautiful production, and he just kind of opened up the world as far as, like, Shakespeare, where he made it not scary. And, like, oh, yes, it is actually quite easy to do. And while he was there, I decided to apply to a study abroad program, and that was at Oxford. So I ended up... You know, you may have heard of it.
Yes.
Before I went to the program, I did some backpacking, which was really great, and I think kind of opened me up as far as, like, the world and seeing that there was another world outside of the United States. And so I trained there for the summer, which was fantastic. You know, it was such a rich experience, and BADA, their summer program especially, is taught by... I mean, they bring in all sorts of people, like Fiona Shaw came, and John Barton came, and, like, all these, like, amazing actors and directors would come and do master classes with us. And, of course, then also, like, they had divided everyone up into little groups that were your classes that you rotated through. And so our teachers for those classes were just, they really pushed you and worked you hard, and it was a fantastic experience. So then I came back and did for my senior year, but for my first semester, I actually had a costuming internship here down at Disney, which was really cool because it was for their millennium, leading up to their millennium. So it was an exciting time to be in Florida, or at least at Disney. So I did design stuff for a semester, and that, like, it was a lot of fun. It was a very corporate. It kind of gave me a little taste, a little bit of, because obviously we had to work with performers and whatnot. I felt a lot of them, they were the people that did not appreciate the tech
all the
people at all.
People, right.
And I was like, God, if this is what people are going to be like, I don't know if this is what I want to do. But I came back, and then I were for the last senior year and was in back-to-back productions, which was good, but I feel like at that point I was a little, like, I felt like I'd maybe grown a little bit more.
I was just going to say you were done.
And so then when we graduated, we decided that we'd all go to Chicago, because most people that went to this school were all from the suburbs of Chicago. So they were all going back anyway, and I knew at that point that, well, one, I think I was strongly considering whether or not if I go the costuming route or I go the acting route. Costuming route, I knew that I would do well and would probably have a good career, because Disney was definitely, they were like, we'll hire you back in an instant. But acting, I wasn't sure about. I didn't know what my career would be. So I think that's probably why I chose that.
Did you just say, I knew that costuming would be okay and I would do well in it, but I didn't know what my career would be like in acting, so that's why I chose it?
Because I needed to see it. I needed to give myself the chance to see if it was a viable option.
Okay. And do you think of yourself I mean, it's interesting because this is the second time you've said something like that. My mother wanted me to play the flute, and there was actually a flute, so I picked the other thing.
Yeah.
So do you think that's something about you? I mean, that...
Always take the challenge.
Yeah.
I think so.
Right. Do you know where that comes from?
I don't really.
Have you thought of it before?
No, I mean, I guess it's something I am aware of. But, yeah, I think it's just more of needing to prove to myself that I can. I don't know if it's...
It can be what you're talking about, I think. You know, the desire to or need to prove. But it can also be a kind of rebellious thing.
I don't consider myself to be rebellious. But it was more of, I don't know, if costuming would be too
easy.
I think also deep down I probably knew that as much as I love doing design stuff and I just love being on stage, like it was, I don't know, it's part of my soul, I guess, and my DNA makeup that's,
yeah.
I think deep down I probably knew that's where I belong, and I was probably also scared that,
yeah, right. Scared or not.
Yeah.
Right. You will. So you decided to go to Chicago with your friends, where it was going to be about trying to get into acting.
And, because I knew at that time, at least, regardless, I wasn't ready for New York or L.A. I moved up there, and of course, then the stress of finding a job for the first time in my life. And unfortunately, right when I graduated, my dad was diagnosed with a, like, very, very rare form of cancer. Like, he was the 10th documented case.
Good grief.
So he spent the summer in the Mayo Clinic, and I would spend a lot of time just coming back and forth, and so acting just...
Had to wait.
That had to wait. And unfortunately, like, 4 months later, my grandfather died. Really, a week later, my stepmom, my dad's wife, was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer.
Good grief.
So that whole year was them, like, one would be in chemo, the other one would be in chemo. But, so I would go home a lot, and it got to the point where I went to a very dark place. I started seeing someone because I knew that I was not going to deal with it well.
Are you talking about that he was
going to die.
Right. And you were very young.
Yeah, I was 21 at the time. He was a history professor at a community college. I knew he was a tough teacher, and he was super passionate about the Civil War, loved the Civil War. And he did American history and all that there. And so at his memorial service, different teachers spoke and different students spoke, and it was like the sight of him I never really... knew, and, you know, they talked about how he would come to school early and be there, like, an hour or two before and always would stay an hour or two after so that he could be accessible there for his students. And there was this one girl who had said, if I can get an A in Mr. Siebert's class, I'm going to go on to school and continue and get my education certificate so I can teach. And she ended up doing that, and she was about to graduate that year. And it was just suddenly, like, this light went on that was like, okay, of anything, you realize, one, how precious life is and how short it is, because he was only 60 when he passed. And that, two, even though, you know, we were not super close until, like, his last year, really, he had something that he loved to do, and he did it every day, and he devoted himself to that. And then that, for some reason, just kicked me into high gear. So when I went back to Chicago, it was suddenly like, and I thought I was going to be a complete mess afterwards, because it was a horrible, you know, months leading up to it. And I went back to Chicago, and I got myself into some acting classes, and then got into improv classes, because I had done improv in college, and I was like, well, it's a good tool, and I always hate doing it in auditions. I went to Improv Olympic, now known as IO, which is where long-form improvisation got its birth. And so I started that, and I completely fell in love and was like, this is what I want to be doing. It took about a year almost to get through their training program. When I was still in the improv training program, I got involved in a sketch group, which lasted 4 or 5 years. And then I also started volunteering in this mentoring program called Drama Girls, which is a theater outreach program. So we would work with these girls from this very low-income Hispanic neighborhood in Chicago, and everyone would be paired up with a little girl. We would provide, like, the skeleton of what the show would be and kind of use their words to fill in the meat, if you will, of the show, and then perform the show with them. So I did that for, like, 6 years and loved it. I think of all my time in Chicago, that was probably the thing I was most proud of, even though, like, no one saw it, but it was one of those selfless things that... It was just an amazing thing to be a part of and to use my artistry to
make someone's life better.
Make someone's life better. And I'm still one of my first girls I ever was a mentor to. We're still very close. And she's about to graduate college this semester. So I did that. And I once I finished the improv training, I was very, very lucky that I was just kind of in the right place at the right time. I got put on a team right away. Team got broken up, and I got put on this veteran team that I had no right being on whatsoever. It was a team of people that had been performing improv for like 12 years that were all taught directly by Del Close, and I know how lucky I was to be a part of this group. And so I performed with them until we were forced to retire for about a year, and then because the stature of the team I was on, that kind of helped me just transfer over to another veteran team, people that were kind of at the top of the game. So I got to, and still to this day, I'm like, I don't think quite at their level, but I just had the right people kind of looking out for me. Mm-hmm. So I got to perform with to some really, really talented, funny people for a number of years, too, whom I'm still very good friends with. So that was about 6 years of, like, just doing comedy. I had no desire to jump into theater. I found this niche that I really liked doing, and I did well, and it got comfortable because I'd never had to audition for anything, and I was performing every week.
And people were laughing.
And people were laughing, and... You know, how many people get to say, for 5 years straight, I performed every week?
Yeah, right.
In front of a full house. So, but I started to get kind of burnt out, I guess. And this friend from the UK who directed me, the professor who had directed me in Merchant of Venice, was actually coming over in a version of Merchant of Venice, which is, it's called the Actor Company. It's really cool. It has, like, 5 actors. They do a whole... Shakespeare show, but they play everybody. So he was actually doing Merchant of Venice. I was like, oh, amazing. I would love to come see you. And I was sitting there watching him, and I was like, this is what I'm missing. And so pretty much after that, I decided that I was going to go back to school. But I was going to go back to school in the UK.
Oh, that's why you have such a wonderful accent.
Yes. That would be one.
Yes.
So that was another one of those aha moments of being like, yep, this is what I need to do. So I started looking at schools and had one-year programs, and then I went over just to check out the schools to see if it's something I really want to do. And then I came back, and so for, I would say, half a year, I spent getting ready for this audition. And I asked one of my friends, who is an actor but also a director, to coach me. Because I, having done improv, even though I did sketch, it was like monologue scripts. I don't understand.
Yeah, right.
So we worked for, like, every week for... at least 3 or 4 months. I auditioned for one school in Chicago, and then the other two I flew over to audition. By the time I got back, I found out that I got into Lambda, and I was shortlisted for Bristol. And so, of course, then on the day that I had to pay my deposit for Lambda is the day I found out I got into Bristol. And that's when I really wanted to go to. So got my refund back, and then I ended ended up going to Bristol. So I sold my condo.
Oh, my.
Pretty much was convinced I was just going to move there, not realizing how difficult that is with visas and whatnot. But, so, yeah, just pretty much, like, uprooted my life. And
Yet again. Right? You chose, you had the easy choice,
yeah.
which would have been to stay in Impra.
Yeah.
And you had the difficult choice.
It does seem like
yeah, it's a pattern.
So, yeah. But it's been the rewarding path.
I'm not suggesting that it's not. I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's interesting when you put a light on it that way. So, yeah, I spent a year there. It was the best. I mean, it was I don't regret a moment of it. It was a fantastic year. It's a terrific school. Not a lot of people know about it. Here, over there, it's Rada, Lambda, and Bristol are the top three. They turned out an amazing amount of very, very fine actors. So I had a terrific time. I knew by the end that it was going to be pretty impossible for me to try to stay. So I decided when coming back, I was originally going to go to L.A. because I knew more people out in L.A. I didn't really know anybody in New York. And I was doing the Conference of Drama Schools, so all of the drama schools in the UK, they host a showcase in New York City. So I was going to do that anyway, just to do it. And the guy who came over to direct it from New York City, we were out one night just kind of chatting. I was telling him what I was planning on doing, and he's like, okay, well, let me just tell you about New York City and why I think maybe it would be a good, just based on what you've said and what you want from a career. But he was like, listen, you will know me. I will introduce you to people, but I really think that New York would be the better choice. So, it was also the tougher choice. There you go, yeah.
Yes.
So I ended up, I was going to go anyway to do the showcase. So I ended up choosing New York. So I moved there knowing two people. He ultimately has become a very good friend, and also I've now worked with him. I just finished a show with him before I came down here, and he's a fantastic director. So, and like that ended up being a great decision, even though I moved here right the fall of 2008. Horrible timing, economy wise. Couldn't get a job anywhere. I had to live. I got kind of at the last minute. The girl I was planning on living with kind of pulled out, so I had to find a place very quickly by myself, which when you're not working is very hard to do in New York City.
Yeah, right.
No one wants to rent
you. No, of course. Oh, you're an actor? Right.
Yeah, and they're like, so I ended up finding a place way up north in the Bronx. So the first, 9 months were pretty difficult, and it was hard to definitely keep yourself motivated and keep yourself getting out there. But slowly but surely, I eventually found a, day job and started meeting more people and started, going to, the actor events that they have that you can, go to meet casting directors or agents, whatnot. And I self-submitted for a commercial, and I ended up booking it. So that kind of started the ball rolling. Then Alberto was directing a show, and he's like, come on, audition. So I did, and I ended up getting it, and that's what the snowball definitely started going from there. And so from there, I've kind of been kind of hopping from one thing to the other, meeting people, or obviously I still go in for things that I've not met that person before to audition and to work with them. But I've been really lucky that at least most everyone has, and I've worked with them a second time, or they're like, yeah, definitely, I've been called in for other things for them.
Well, this has happened to you all through your career.
Yeah, which is,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Great.
Yes.
Touch wood, hope it doesn't stop, but.
Well, it's probably not just luck.
Being in my 30s in New York City is a time when I was ready to be there, ready to jump through the hoops that you have to, that you know that it's really, I would say, 90% of who you know, 5% of personality, and the rest is talent. Talent's the icing on the cake. But, it really does have...
But if you don't have the other two, you're not getting there, and that's all there is to it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, it's something...
But you have to have that 5%. But it's not what gets you there.
It's not what gets you there, but you also have to, and, you know, friends of mine that are younger, not all of them are willing. And I remember being that way, of being like, this is about art. I shouldn't have to kowtow to people and, you know, schmooze and whatnot. But, you know,
it's the game.
It's the game. It's what you have to do. And I'm at a place in my life where I'm like, yeah, I'm willing to do, I'm the CEO of my own company now. So I'm
right.
willing to
That's exactly
to do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's been good. I mean, I feel, I've only been in New York for, I guess, I'm just starting my fourth year there. That in the short amount of time I've been there, I've
You're actually
able,
working.
I'm actually working. I'm doing a lot. I mean, this was a huge opportunity for me to get this show because I'm actually getting my equity card now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you, which is very, very exciting.
Well, let's talk about this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this show is Perfect Wedding, which is a farce. And where did you audition for it?
New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about the show.
As soon as I got the breakdown for the audition, because I freelance with an agent, and so she sent me this thing, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, but this is going to be a far stretch, because this is an equity contract, and, you know, it's not, I'm, you know,
yeah.
if it's somebody is the same, and but has a already, has our contract,
you're saying, this, I'm going to send this back to you, see and you stopped in every other word, so this is what I think you were saying. I think you were saying that if they auditioned someone who's as good as you,
yeah,
and they already had their equity card, they would choose them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Thank you. My coffee hasn't yet done yet.
All right. Well, apparently they didn't.
They didn't, and we've now learned, our director has told us, Bruce Jordan, who is a master, has said that we were all his first choice.
Wow.
From the beginning. And I went through 4 rounds of auditions, which... And each time it was like, oh, my God, this really could happen. This really could happen. Because there was an initial audition and then 3 callbacks. So the 4th and final audition, between the 3rd and 4th was like 2 weeks, to which I was like, oh, my God. And I was involved in so many things at that time. It was like everything always happens at the same time anyway. That's just the way New York works, I think. So it was like, luckily I was involved in so much, I didn't have too much time to really stew about it, but there were definitely moments of like, I just want to know! So then the 4th and final callback came, and he's like, we'll let you know by the end of today. And I was like, okay, good. So then I got the call at the end of the day. They're like, and they'll give you your equity card, which I was like, oh my God! So I was super excited. And then, this was, you know, really my first time getting, you know, like, to travel somewhere to go do a show and to really, I mean, I've been paid stipends for show and whatnot, but being actually a paid actor has been fantastic. And then working with, like, from day one, like, our first read-through, this cast is just, we were just all in love with each other. Oh. It was just, we made each other laugh. Lisa, we could hardly, like, there was moments where he's like, pull it together, guys, because we couldn't keep from laughing on stage. And it's just been amazing to work with them. And then working with Bruce, like, I thought I knew comedy, having my videos on the comedy stages, and he is just, he's this master of just knowing just the right inflection or saying the word this way, that will get you the laugh, because he just wants you to be, like, he's a ultimate perfectionist, but he knows what he's talking about. I've learned so much.
Yeah, well, this is the moment for me to say you are absolutely remarkable in it. You're really terrific. And it's when you're on stage, you're who we're watching. I mean, really, it's
well,
the truth.
You.
You're hilariously funny. And,
thank you.
So, congratulations.
Thank
you deserve
you.
It absolutely. So, how long is it running?
So, well, that's yet to be...
Oh, they might extend.
They might extend.
Yeah,
so
it was sold out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and right now we're going through the 9th of September, but we're hoping, fingers crossed, that we'll get to extend, and especially now that the Gompertz has, I guess, twice as many seats from what I understand.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they'll get to
have
more people, or at least as word of mouth.
Yes. Well, then I'll do my part.
Thank you. But no, I mean, it's a tremendous, it's a wonderful play to be in, and Julie is, as you can see, is, have seen, it's a, she's...
It's a wonderful part.
She's hysterically funny, and Bruce said that to me the first day, and he's like, she's a great part, and I was like, I know, thank you.
Yeah.
So...
It is a great part, and it's perfect for you.
Yes.
And your accent is wonderful. I thought you were British.
Thank you. I guess I've had it. There is somebody saying the other day that she was like, oh my God, we thought you were. Yeah. There were times we could barely even understand it was so thick. I was like...
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
I think that's a good thing. But yeah, no, it's been a delight. The thought of going back to New York right now is like,
hot.
Yes.
Okay. So the other question that I ask, it really is a version of what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. You have really spent your life pursuing this in one way or another. Would you just think for a moment if there's anything that you would say about what that's like?
I guess what I would say, because it's something somebody told me very early on, which has always stuck through me, and that's how I kind of gauge whenever I question, am I doing the right thing? And I ask myself this question, and the question is... And I think it's somebody's quote, probably. If you could be doing anything else but what you're doing, you should do that. If you're doing this to make money and be famous, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. If you're doing it knowing how hard it is to make a living at it, but you do it anyway, you're doing it for the right reasons. And that's always kind of my touchstone of being like, yep, this is, even for the stuff that's non-paid, that, you know, my mother sees and no one else, it's still what I'd rather be doing. And even, you know, and I compare it to back in Chicago when, you know, I owned my own condo and I had a 9-to-5 job and, yeah, I was still able to perform, but I'm still happier now being far more poor and living in a very expensive city that, yep, I'm still doing what I love. And I'm happy to be in that place as long as I'm still moving forward and up. Does that answer your question?
It answers my question. And it's a very good place to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kate.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And there you have the very delightful, very passionate, very much herself, Kate Siepert. And because this interview was long and I didn't want to cut any more than I had to, I don't have very much time left in the show. So I'm going to play Sharon Leslie's review of A Perfect Wedding, and here it is. Not everyone likes a farce, but for me, farces are fun. No heavy thinking, no grand lesson to be learned, just an escape from the doldrums of daily living by watching someone else, fictional, of course, nearly ruin their life, usually through their stupidity. So it is with the fast-paced fluttering in Perfect Wedding at Florida Studio Theater. This romp, in the grand tradition of French and English bedroom farces, takes place in a honeymoon suite of an English country cottage hotel. The morning after a sloshing stag party, the hungover groom-to-be wakes up on his wedding day next to a naked lady. And he doesn't remember anything about how she got there or who she is, but he does seem to recall, as the story proceeds, that he had a pretty marvelous dream. To tell too much of the story would confuse you, ruin the plot twists, and spoil the fun, so go and be surprised. The director of this work, Bruce Jordan, has worked on the piece since its inception in upstate New York. Navigating the rough waters of a farce is a tricky undertaking. This production sails with a full head of wind. The cast inhabit their roles with gusto. A charming mix-up of identities ensues as the groom-to-be tries to outsmart each increasingly outlandish situation. Naturally, a playfulness with who comes in and out and hides behind various doors add to the comedy. Also, there's a pleasant play of confusion with names, Julie and Judy. The maid is often the best role in a farce, and Kate Siepert carries it off splendidly. Love the set, and the costumes are colorfully appropriate. For me, It was great to get out of the Florida heat and into the almost finished and attractively remodeled Gompertz Theater and be thoroughly entertained by a bunch of characters in a sweaty fever. A good laugh is good for the soul. So go, let go, and enjoy the goings-on in Perfect Wedding. As Sharon says, this is a delightful, delicious romp. It's just a chance to put everything else aside and enjoy several hours. And I don't know if you remember in the interview, Kate talks about how Lisa McMillan breaks up the cast. Well, she's wonderful in this, and it's particularly wonderful for me to see her in this because if you've been listening to the show for a year, then you know that last year I interviewed Lisa when she was in a very, very different play, Savannah Disputation, another wonderful experience in the theater, but a very, very different character. And it's always delightful to see a really good actor at work. And if you saw her in Savannah Disputation, and then I know she did August Osage County, which was yet another departure, and here she is being the very ditzy mommy of the bride. So, by all means, run down to see Perfect Wedding at the Gompertz Theater. As always, I need to thank Josh Hackney, my IT soulmate, the guy who makes it possible for me to do whatever it is I do right with this show, and also with my computer and my iPhone and my recording. Josh can do everything. And so if you need anyone to do any of those things, you really want it to be Josh Hackney, and you can get him the way you can get me, which is by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, show.com. And again, you can get me, you can get Josh, you can get the book, you can get an article on phone therapy, which is what I only do these days. So if you're curious about any of those things, please go up on my website. And if you've heard this show or another show and you have liked it and you use the social media, please tell everyone in your team, group, whatever, that you have liked it. And as always, I hope that you got something that you can use from this show. Something that helps you to think about yourself, to think about the person you might be, that you may not be quite yet. Anyway, I hope that whatever it is you heard will bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going. only ashes.